I want to talk to you about your most recent collection, because there was a huge reaction to that. And as we said, not all of it completely positive, but definitely a really excited reaction. And I wanted to ask you about that menswear show, because for me, that was such a standout from the London shows, because I think more than any other designer, you really challenged menswear and you pushed it somewhere. It wasn't really just clothes. It was about what menswear could be. Was that something that was very intentional with that show?
I don't think, in terms of the men's show, I didn't intentionally go out to... I think people find when they see something which they don't expect from a designer, I think they ultimately think you're going out to shock, which wasn't the idea. The idea was, for me, that was just exactly where I saw menswear in 3 months' time, if you know what I mean. I think I saw it about a dialogue. You know, for me, always a show is about, like, storytelling. You know, I'm originally Irish, and I grew up there. And in Ireland, it's all about storytelling. And I wanted the show to feel like a dialogue between the mother and the son. What is that dialogue? Not in, like, a shocking way. And I feel like that was the idea. It was that boundary between... not actually between masculine and femininity, but between... a male and a female mind, if you know what I mean, like a homogenous wardrobe, the idea that clothing is just clothing. It doesn't matter who wears it. It's a point of view. It's, you know, it's what you decide to pick up. You know, I don't think necessarily clothing can be feminine or masculine. I think it's just a character. You know, ultimately you have to build a character in the show. And I feel like it worked. It was one of the shows I actually... It was a very personal show for me, not in that either mother and son relationship, but just in terms of the overall impact of it. Do you know what I mean? When we start to come up with looks and you see them realized, you know when you're hitting something which looks awkward in you in your own mind. The show still doesn't make sense to me, but I hope that when it's produced and in shops next year, it will. Do you know what I mean? So it shouldn't make sense now.
Hmm. For me, I would say that obviously there's a huge amount of change happening with London menswear at the moment, but still at the root of menswear is this inherent conservatism about how men should dress, what masculinity is, and what menswear should be about. Do you find that? Do you find that quite restrictive? I think that kind of...
I find it really restrictive, but ultimately, when I come to execute the final thing, I will always push it further than I've ever pushed it. And some seasons it works really well, and some seasons it's goddamn awful. Do you know what I mean? That's the risk that you take if you're going to do something like that. Things will never, like, I think ultimately, if I think the issue that lies within clothing, and even in women's wear, is we put clothing on our body to, well, it's part of psyche, it's part of that. You know, there is a psychology to what you wear. Do you want to sleep with someone who looks like a Christmas tree? Not really. But the concept of that, of clothing, and the idea of, like, the pairing of it, I think you can still get away with something which is extreme but teamed with something. And I feel like you're more likely to want to sleep with a guy in jeans and a t-shirt. It's more sexy. It's more, that's what it's about. But does that help an industry? I don't think so. I think we have to push things. Things have to still be pushed, because ultimately, in 10 years' time, that will be normal. That's the way it works. It's very frustrating sometimes when you want to take risk in your own soil. But you're blocked by conservative viewpoints, you're blocked by money. We live in a world that you've got to sell so much to be able to get by. I have to pay a team of nine. I have to have my basics. I have to have those things. And it's sometimes really sad when you come up with something which you inherently believe is something, that one idea that is new, and it disappears.
I want to go back to the beginning, and that's something you just mentioned then, about growing up and seeing clothes and just having that thirst for them. Because we've talked about the present, but I want to find out when your interest in fashion first came about, like when your first sort of relation with fashion developed. Was that at a very young age?
I think I've always been aware of clothing. Like, my grandfather was a textile designer and a creative director of a print company. I've always been kind of aware of, like, he used to always, like, push me on proportion and, like, proportional balance of color and design and pattern and how to do repeat patterns and or how to jar colors together to create something new, you know? He used to work on camouflage and, you know, like, kind of like liberty and things like that, where you were trying to create patterns as an overall vibe, even if it's for a tea towel or a sofa. I think through that, I kind of became at a younger age, I was obsessed with my fabric. Like, I would just, like a piece of fabric would be like, you know, if it was like silk, it was like genius. It was like so amazing. Like, a silk scarf was like an incredible thing. I don't know why, but I was always into that level. But I ultimately wanted to, weirdly, I started off being in a lot of youth theatre and doing drama, and I was in the National Youth Music Theatre, and I was in the National Youth Theatre, and I was obsessed with this idea of, you know, like, proper stage. Like, I did, like, this play called The Dreamers, and it was like an adaptation of A Midsummer Night's Dream, and in which I was a fairy running around a stage, and I did stage combat, and I did part of, like, Richard II, and I was obsessed. And then I went to Washington, D.C. to study at a school there and became more and more obsessed. And then I think I woke up one morning during the process of being at drama school. I was doing, like, the Alexander technique, and I think I was doing a class in it, and it was, like, lying on the floor, where you're, like, thinking about your spine. And then I was like, it wasn't fulfilling me enough in a way. And I don't think I could have ever brought something modern to it. I don't know if I could have, maybe I wasn't right for acting at all, because I wanted to create characters, but I wanted to create external characters, not an internal character. Which is maybe sounds really confusing. I don't know about that. That makes sense. But it was that idea. I would rather have made a kind of like something you can put over someone to create a character than actually become the character myself.
So how did you make the move from acting to fashion? Was that quite a difficult decision? It sounds like it was something quite spontaneous. But
it was very spontaneous. I dropped out in the second year and hopped on a flight and went back. And then I was confronted by my parents to pay back my duties on all those bills I'd racked up. And my dad was coaching a rugby team in Southern Ireland, and I blagged my way and got a job in Brown Thomas in this department store, which is owned by Selfridges, and there's another one in Canada which is part of the same group, which is, I think it's the Weston family in them. So I started working in the men's super brand department. And it was like Prada, it was like YSL, it was when Dior had started, and like when Dolce & Gabbana was like big, and it was like, it was for me, like, menswear was this like new thing. It was like so exciting, you know, there was something really exciting about it. And one day when I was in there, a guy from Prada had popped by, and he was like, can you help me merchandise some reels? And I merchandised then this Prada collection, which was with Holiday and Brown prints, and it was like bags, and it was an amazing collection. And in the store we had Prada Sport and Prada Mainline, so we mixed it all together. And he was like, well, if you ever come to London, you know, you can get a job. So then obviously I was like, London, how amazing would that be? I can get out of here and do something there. But I stayed for a while, and I never followed it up. And then it was weirdly in the store when I then decided, I'm cutting too forward, I then decided to apply for art school. And I got turned down by Saddle St. Martin's. I got turned down by many schools, but there was London College of Fashion had like a menswear course, and there was lots of spaces on it. So I was like, great, here's my menswear offering. This is what I've done before. I've merchandised 3 racks, and here's some awful sketches. Can I go? And they were like, fine. I had the grades to get in, so I went. And through that process, I obviously, in London, became obsessed by clothing, completely had forgot drama completely. Like, it was never like a thing. I was like, it was like, it was done. I was like, finished. I was now straight into an obsession over like being in the library, like consuming magazines like there was no tomorrow, like going through everything. And I then went into Prada one day, and then this guy Walter was like, oh, why did you get back to me? This is a woman called Manuela Pavese. Would you like a job? I was like, well, I'm poor, and of course. So I was like, forgot the idea of school. So I did. I ran alongside and did both. I did, turned up to class, if even, within the first 2 years. Not at all sometimes, for a whole year. And I was working in Prada with this, with a team there, and then with this woman called Manuela Pavese, who has been a huge inspiration to me, because I think I love her vision. She like does the visual communications there, and her styling is incredible. Her photography makes sense to me. And it was such an amazing moment, because it was like someone like thrashing you to push an idea. How to make a mannequin look interesting in a store, how to sell to a consumer. And to be honest, I learned more working at Prada than as a visual merchandiser with someone who I truly believed in than I ever learned at Lancôme de Fashion. And I found it very, I realized that you could never teach it. You had to like get out there and like be in the depth of the shit of it and like wade through it until you could work out what it's about.
I just picked up on something you said then about your time at Prada, where you said how to sell clothes. That's what you learned when you were there. And I wanted to ask you later on, but we've kind of come to it early, about that fusion between commerciality and creativity. Mm. And it seems for you like you've embraced that as a very positive thing, how to sell something, what
people
want.
You have to, or you'll become, ultimately you will not have a job, and ultimately you'll be extremely depressed, because you want to see your clothing on people, and you want to see it everywhere as much as possible. That's why, for example, we're doing a Topshop collaboration. I want people of all age demographics to buy it. Fashion cannot be elite at all. In the modern world, it is impossible. Luxury, if luxury is a form of elitism, then I don't want to be part of it.
I'm interested in that moment for you where you kind of, because you said earlier in our conversation, we've been going a long time, but people kind of became aware of us recently. Where was that moment for you in your...
I don't know. I think the only time you ever know is that people start to shoot your clothing. You're like, oh, it's there. Or someone wears it. That commerciality thing again. That big word. But I think you just start... I find it very difficult, because I'm in a studio and I'm staring out a window and at my desk. And I work with a stylist, Benjamin Bruno, who is really... You know, who is my dialogue... It's very insular. I sometimes forget what's going on. Really forget. But I think you have to. I never, you know, I do sometimes get caught up in sales, because ultimately I want to know how much I can spend on the next show. And, you know, and you fight to try it. I think some people, you know, I think some people see the problem with the industry that I find, and that's why I can never... I find it very difficult going out or in getting involved in it, is that I think people see clothing as this like fantastical like mega money machine. It's like the Diet Coke thing. It's like Coca-Cola, I know the name. So if I apply that to anything else, and I suddenly, if one person knows your name, they feel that you're just as big as Coca-Cola, then it's like they feel that I get in and out of a cab every day. I have like a staff of 45 at my house, and I live in this like, but the reality is actually I smoke 40 cigarettes a day, I need a Mars bar, and I'm working 24 hours a day to try to keep it going. And my biggest thing at the end of the month is paying the staff. Like, that's my biggest responsibility. I'm married to, ultimately I'm married to my job and my business, and it has to come first, because people's lives depend on having a job. And that's tough. And I think that's sometimes why I find that, you know, yes, we have come to, someone's found, we have being started to be noticed, which is incredible, and it really makes it exciting, because I want people to know what I'm doing and I believe in what I'm doing. But sometimes the insularness of like 10,000 bills coming through the post, and you're an accountant, you are a friend, you are personnel, you are trying to organize a show, you're pulling all these people in to help, it sometimes is very, to actually know what's actually physically going on out there is impossible sometimes, and you're trying to be aware of what's going on. Some days it's tough because you're kind of trying to balance everything at once, balance the books, balance people, you know, try to, you know, I don't go out to be liked by everyone. You either like it or get it. And I think, I'm hoping that some people are starting to like what we do. Eventually, I would hope. I'm like praying.